Welcome to Nature Calls, conversations from the Hudson Valley. Our team's goal is to present science-based information about gardening and all things nature in New York's Hudson Valley. Host Gene and Tim, along with team members Teresa and Linda, are master gardener volunteers for New York's Columbia and Greene counties. So if you're interested in gardening or nature or nuggets of information about what's happening outside your door, settle in. Enjoy the conversation. Whatever the season, we have something to say.
Hi, I'm Tim Kennelty.
And I'm Gene Thomas. Welcome to Nature Calls, Conversations from the Hudson Valley. We're here today with Sarah Cashin and Troy Weldy. Troy is the president and Sarah is on the Board of Trustees, the chairperson of the Columbia Land Conservancy. Our listeners already know about some of CLC's public conservation areas from Heidi Bach's wonderful recurring segment, Trekking the Trails. But today we want to dig in with Sarah and Troy to learn more about the Land Conservancy and the work they do. Welcome, Sarah and Troy.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Let's start at the beginning. Tell us a little bit about the history and mission of the CLC.
Okay, I will start. I'll start with the mission, really the most important. The Columbia Land Conservancy works with our community to conserve the farmlands, forests, wildlife habitat, and rural character of Columbia County, strengthening connections between people and the land. CLC was started in 1986 by a group of individuals interested to protect the conservation value of some privately owned land. And since then, it has protected over 35,000 acres across the county. We have an overarching goal of inspiring our community to more deeply connect with and care about and protect the natural world. We've also recently worked to articulate specific commitments the organization is making and striving to uphold, and those are building a healthy workplace, providing equitable access to and meaningful connections with the land, strengthening the community, and being accountable for our actions.
So full disclosure, I am on the board of CLC, and I work with Troy and Sarah all the time, and they're really wonderful people to work with, so we're really happy to have them here. And now that you've talked a little bit, Sarah, about the mission of the organization, maybe you can both tell us a little bit about your backgrounds and how you got involved with the organization.
I joined the Columbia Land Conservancy in September of 2020 as the president. And prior to that, I was with the Nature Conservancy for over 20 years in a variety of roles, initially hired as a botanist and worked as a lobbyist, a land manager, forest carbon developer, working on invasive species issues, and a whole host of opportunities that they were able to provide for me. I was looking for a new challenge and looking to do something where I could be closer to the ground and the work that we were doing, and had been to Columbia County many times, recreate here many years, know many people here, and this was just a great opportunity to join. Early in my career, I taught at Vassar College, and one of my former students is actually here on staff at the Columbia Land Conservancy, so I feel like I've come full circle.
So you always learn about people when you're interviewing them that they don't tell you in person. Why is that? I don't know. It's like this full reveal. And by the way, like to go on a walk with Troy, it's like if you think you know something about plants, you really don't, because Troy is a botanist and knows everything about plants. What about you, Sarah? Tell us about your background.
So I've been on the Board of Trustees for about 7 years and have been a supporter for much longer than that of Columbia Land Conservancy. My father became involved with CLC after he put his Spencertown farm under easement protection in the 1990s, and I learned about the organization and the great work it was doing through him. I also worked for about 10 years as a nonprofit administrator at a Westchester County Nature Preserve, and I've always had a strong affinity for conservation and the outdoors.
Probably many of our listeners know the Land Conservancy because they've been to one of the many PCAs, public conservation areas. Can you tell us a little about these areas and how folks can access them, and how did they all come about generally?
Sure. Columbia Land Conservancy has 10 public conservation areas. The first one that was created in 1992 is in Hudson, the Greenport Conservation Area. And the most recent one is Over Mountain Conservation Area, which opened in 2018 in Ankrum. And it's the largest of our PCAs.
So your website would have a listing?
It does.
Okay.
And lots of detail about what is each conservation area.
And are they free?
They are free. And they're open dawn to dusk every day of the year.
Parking?
Parking is available, and we do ask that you park in designated areas, but otherwise come and enjoy the preserves. A lot of people come for strolling, walking, birding. We have hunting at some properties if you're registered for that, fishing as well, and biking. It's really just the opportunity to be out and connect with nature.
Dog walking. There's a lot of dog walking going on.
Yeah, that's a lot more than I expect. I figure these places, you just go out and take a stroll out in the woods and you can do all these other things.
And there's a lot going on at Ooms, right? Ooms, which is a beautiful, beautiful public conservation area. There's work on the boardwalks and some other things going on there, right?
There is. And Ooms, I admit, is my favorite place. It has great views. The birding there is fantastic. There are bobolinks and meadowlarks and a number of other grassland birds present on site. And it's a great place to take your kids, take your dog, or just go for yourself for some quiet.
What are boardwalks for?
So the boardwalk allows you to get around the pond and the wetland that is there and without getting your feet too wet. Okay. And the boardwalk has come into disrepair. We got a grant from New York State through the Environmental Protection Fund and the Land Trust Alliance to replace the boardwalk. We have been reaching out to the community to determine what we want to do with Ooms and with the boardwalk beyond just a simple replacement of what's there. So we've been having multiple conversations with the community about what they would like to see or not like to see at the property. And we will soon be starting construction there to replace the boardwalk and add in some other benefits to people.
Ooms, if you've never been to Ooms, and I forget what town, is it in Chatham officially?
Ooms is in the town of Chatham,
yeah,
on Rock City Road.
If you've never seen a bobolink or a meadowlark, I mean, they're really kind of rare, right? And you need a lot of grassland. So both Overmountain and Ooms actually have these birds because it's a huge amount of grassland, mm-hmm. correct?
Those and Greenport also will have bobolinks.
Ah, okay. Okay, and if you've never seen one, I mean, they're amazing. They're beautiful, and you can see them, from what months do you think? Like from May through September or something like that?
That's a good time frame. Sometimes they'll start heading out a little bit earlier. You'll see them starting to group up and heading out maybe even in August.
And you want to wear your tick protection, but even if you stay on the trails, you can see mm-hmm. those birds, right?
And there are also lots of bluebirds at all of these properties.
Heidi has already done several segments, and I'm pretty sure she's done one on Ooms as far as the trekking the trails.
Yeah.
So those will be available on the website, and we'll make sure that we post which ones have to do with that. In fact, we're going to be doing clusters of just the trail hikes. Mm-hmm. So that's going to be pretty
Excellent.
Interesting down the line. One of the areas where CLC conserves lands, and you're always telling us, through conservation easements. I'm somebody that likes definitions. What is a conservation easement, and why is it necessary?
A conservation easement is an agreement between the landowner and, in our case, the Columbia Land Conservancy, where the landowners agree not to develop their property. And it will keep the property generally as a piece of property that cannot be subdivided. So the goal is to maintain either the forest area or the grassland area or the farm practices that are happening on the property. So it does limit development in those areas, but it maintains that rural character that so many people love about Columbia County.
So somebody can, they've got 100 acres and they want to give you an easement for 5 acres, that's doable?
We wouldn't do anything that small.
Okay.
Because we also have to, we have legal responsibilities associated with an easement.
Okay.
And those legal responsibilities include monitoring it, making sure that future landowners to the property are adhering to the initial agreement of that easement. And that's grown over time in regards to our minimum standards for a conservation easement. We want land that has good conservation value, and that could be the forests that are there, the wildlife that's using it, water quality protection on the property. And depending on what those conservation values are, we'll change the threshold of what is the minimum number of acres. But generally, I would say we probably would not do a conservation easement on anything less than 50 acres.
Okay, so my 2 acres is still not in action.
I think you could just protect it yourself. Stand out in the front yard with a gun.
I do have my permit. We're good. Okay, why would somebody, landowner, grant an easement? Are there benefits other than, you know, feeling good about your civic duty?
There are tax benefits that come with that. It's considered a charitable contribution when you donate a conservation easement. There are state and federal programs available where you can purchase a conservation easement. That's largely what we do with our ag lands, and it's a way to support the farm community with purchasing the development rights from a farm and getting that farmer income for not developing the land and keeping it as a farm. The goal of that program is to keep farms as farms. There are similar programs with forest, keep forest as forest.
I like that.
Yeah, it's great, isn't it?
Yeah.
And I know some of the staff actually, one of the things they do, one of the big responsibilities is monitoring easements. I've been out with them and it's a lot of fun just mm-hmm. kind of walking around the property. But they also go up in a plane, one thing that I haven't done and probably will never do because it's a small plane. What about that? Is it because the land's so big and you can't walk it? Why do they go up in a plane?
So the Columbia Land Conservancy has a lot of conservation easements around the county. We have over 30,000 acres that's protected through a conservation easement, and 215 easements across the county. So it's hard to visit all of those in 1 year. So the goal is every other year, we're putting boots on the ground on that property. The years where we do not put boots on the ground, we're flying over all of our properties and checking to see if any development has happened. And if there is, then we know which properties to go look at sooner. I did get to go up in a plane soon after I started.
And I think there's a reason for that. They took you up in a plane.
Yeah. Look at that smile.
To test you.
It's a very small plane.
Yeah.
And Heidi actually had prepared me in regards to air sickness. And so I took my Dramamine. I was taking ginger gum and pressure points. I had no problems with the plane. The pilot was very... Very, it was a smooth flying day.
Did they tell you about this in the job interview?
They did not.
Responsibilities. There you go. And conservation easements are pretty common across the country, right? Or is it the Northeast where there are more easements? Are there a lot of conservation easements like out in the West too?
There are. There are conservation easements all across the country. And the scale varies depending on the organization and depending on where in the country that you are located. In the Hudson Valley, the easements tend to be on the smaller size. In the Adirondacks, the easements will be much larger than they are here.
And I don't think that many people are really aware of the land is protected. I mean, Columbia County is such an amazing, amazing area in terms of natural resources. And a lot of the land is protected, not protected like, you know, no one can go on it, but it's just you can't develop in certain areas, right?
Correct. And an easement, some people think of easements as access. Conservation easements are not necessarily about access. A landowner can allow easement, can allow access to their land if they choose, but just because you put a conservation easement on your land does not mean you're also giving the public the right to access that land.
Like they see in England where all these people go hiking through some rich guy's yard and say they've got the easement. It's not like that.
Correct.
Okay, good to know.
And people know when they buy a property if it has a conservation easement, I assume, right?
They do. And if somebody buys a property, we get notified from that, and we're reaching out to that landowner very soon after to introduce ourselves, to sit down with them, to talk to them about the restrictions that are there on the property and why the easement was put into place. Beyond the tax benefits of doing a conservation easement, it's really about somebody wanting to preserve their legacy on the land. The financial benefits are not enough on an easement to do it for that alone. It has to be that you're looking to lock in your legacy on this land where you've loved this land for all your life and you want to ensure that somebody doesn't come along later and cut down all the trees or subdivide the property into 5-acre lots and a housing development goes in.
So what's the life of an easement? It's in perpetuity?
It is forever.
So you whoever else wants that land has to maintain the easement as well. Wow.
There's not too many things that are forever in life, right? It's like one of those very few things that you can say is in perpetuity. I mean, from law school classes, I remember in perpetuity, but it never seemed to really apply in practical matters.
Which we have to then be careful about a conservation easement, because knowing that our responsibility to that land, our commitment to that landowner is forever, that we need to make sure that we have the resources available to us that we can follow up forever with that landowner.
Okay, so that easement can be broken in many ways, in many directions from different places, so that's why you have to monitor. Mm-hmm. Another thing comes to my tiny little mind is they want the land staying as it is and not interfered with, not farmed. What about monitoring it for things like invasives?
That's really the landowner's responsibility, though, right? It's not the Land Conservancy's responsibility if you have an easement.
It is, but sometimes the conservation values associated with that property could be lost due to an invasive species moving in. So we do want to work with landowners and guide them in the right direction for land management and help them identify resources that could be available to manage that land to protect the overall conservation resources that are present there.
I'm kind of glad they won't take an easement. That's a lot of responsibility. It truly is. It's awesome. CLC is also involved with supporting local farmers other than easements. Could you tell us about some of those projects?
Columbia Land Conservancy has operated a farmer landowner match program in partnership with the Dutchess Land Conservancy since 2012. And to date, the program has assisted farmers and landowners in establishing 90 matches with over 4,200 acres. And what this match program does is that if you own land that could be farmed, but you don't farm yourself, there are other people out there who do not have the land but want to farm it, and we bring you together. So it's a bit of a dating app for those that want to farm versus those that have the land, and bringing them together.
Pictures of the land.
And I mean, I think this is one of the things that kind of misconception, right? That these people, it's very easy to go out there and buy land and farm, but that's not true, right? It's difficult and challenging to find land and to have land to farm on, even in Columbia County, right?
And land has become very expensive.
Right.
So you have those people who are buying the land who don't necessarily have the time or interest or knowledge to farm it. But those who do, we create that match as part of that. And there are benefits then to the landowner, also tax benefits. There are agricultural exemptions that can be maintained if your land is being farmed. And that's where a lot of the matches can come into play. The landowner needs to work with and allow that farmer to farm the land, though, the way in which works for that farmer. We have seen cases where the landowner wants to dictate how the land is farmed without having that farming knowledge.
Interesting, though. I mean, I think this is, I mean, again, it's like one of the things that people kind of drive along and see farms and they just think, oh, well, a farmer owns the land, right? It's not so simple, really, right?
Right. So in farming, there are different types of farms, different types of acreage that could be as part of that. We actually just had a 14-acre parcel that CLC has owned that we are selling to a farmer to utilize. So farming could happen at multiple scales. It can be just a few acres, a flower farm, even a small chicken operation could use just a couple of acres, versus something more in regards to grain is going to take hundreds of acres to have a viable grain operation.
So the way I got involved with the Land Conservancy is I did some volunteer work. We did some invasive cleanup. We did some planting, which was a huge amount of fun. And I really would recommend it to people to volunteer with the Land Conservancy, because you meet these great people and you have, you know, even if you don't have land, then you can actually go out and make a difference. I know you have walks and you have different volunteer programs. Can you talk a little bit about that? And how would I volunteer if I was looking at the website and just thought, I want to go out there and do something this year?
Sure, sure. So first, for the public programming, our programming is quite varied and multifaceted. We've had foraging programs, Night Star programs, forest carbon programs, animal tracking programs. And one of our most recent series is Nature Quest, which invites families to learn about what animals live at our PCAs. And we're partnering with local libraries on Nature Quest to provide poems and activities for families to complete at each site. We're always open to working with partnering organizations and do that as well for citizen science training. Citizen science is when members of the general public collect data and they share that data with professional scientists who are studying that topic on a broader, more intensive way. And examples of citizen scientists are Project Feeder Watch, Project Nest Watch, both sponsored by Cornell Lab for Ornithology. And then there's the Amphibian Migrations and Road
very
Crossing
cool.
Project,
Cool.
Which is sponsored by the New York State Department of Environmental Conservation. That's done in springtime. Volunteers go out in the evening and check out what kind of amphibians are actually trying to get to their breeding grounds. And then in doing that, they have to cross roads, which can be very dangerous for them.
Do you get little flags?
Flags, bright vests,
you have
flashlights.
To be ready, right? You have to be ready because you don't ever know when they're going to have that crossing, right?
I've done it for a couple of years right in my neighborhood. I mean, you kind of want to do it near where you live because the whole point is to keep the roads, keep cars from killing more amphibians.
Or you, right?
Yeah. But it's amazing. I mean, it's usually the first wet night in the spring that's a certain temperature that this migration happens. And who would know if you're not out at that time. Yeah. So you don't see these creatures. But yeah, that's another example of citizen science. Tomorrow, there's going to be one of our board members, Will Yandick, is leading a bird walk at OOMS, which is part of the Great Backyard Bird Count, which is another citizen science project sponsored by Cornell.
Yeah, I know there's a lot of birders who are involved with kind of checking the nest boxes and things like that.
Yeah, I do that too, bluebird nest boxes.
Yeah, it's a great thing to do, and you don't have to put a huge amount of time into a lot of these things.
No,
right?
And you learn so much.
Yeah.
By every week checking those boxes, you're learning about the process of the development of the nesting birds. And
sometimes it's harsh, right? Because sometimes they don't make it. I mean, you learn a lot.
Yeah,
right?
Nature can be cruel.
It really can.
But to your question about volunteers, we are always happy to have volunteers. And we're excited to announce our revitalized volunteer program. The mission of our volunteer program is to strengthen connections between people and the land while supporting the staff of CLC on the maintenance and preservation of the PCAs, the public conservation areas. So we've created three volunteer categories that offer a variety of options for engagement and also a range of skill levels and time commitment and physical accessibility. So the categories are trail stewards, trail grazers, I love the name, and forestry crew. Most of the activities are designed to do on your own schedule, at your own pace, but we'll also still be continuing to hold group volunteer projects. And right now, the biggest demand is for pruning vegetation and clearing down trees on trails, so we're going to be offering some training. For that, we'll even have a chainsaw training course this spring. So if you go to our website and look under the volunteers section, you'll see that all the offerings there.
Yeah, I always say there's no excuse. If you don't have a yard or if you live in an apartment or something, there is no excuse. You must go out and do something.
I know there's a lot of other massive projects going on, and I'm hearing about the Taconic Headwaters Project. What is that?
The Taconic Headwaters is the source of drinking water for the city of Hudson. So it's also an important wildlife corridor, part of the Mid-Hudson Wildlife Corridor. So it has benefits both to people and nature, and it's an area that the Columbia Land Conservancy has identified as very important, high-ranking conservation value within Columbia County. Through a grant with DEC and the Hudson River Estuary Program, we developed a Taconic Watershed Conservation Plan. And that was done with a lot of citizens in the area who volunteered their time to develop this conservation plan for the Taconic Watershed, looking at what activities, what type of conservation could happen there, what's the important areas, what's the conservation values and resources that are in this location, and how do we work together to conserve this really special place, to conserve that drinking water, and to ensure that wildlife with climate issues are able to traverse from all the way from the Southern Blue Ridge up to the Canadian Maritime, which is where some of the progressions we're expecting for this movement. And we're in a pinch point here in the Hudson Valley and here in Columbia County. And this is one of those critical areas of national importance on climate issues and climate migration.
So, wow, it's like a station on the Underground Railroad.
Mm-hmm.
So can you talk a little bit about what is a watershed, and is it clean drinking water? Are we talking about animal migration, or is it really both?
It's both. So a watershed is, if you think about a drop of rainwater falling, where does that raindrop ultimately end up? And in this case here, all the rainwater in a particular geography that falls will come through the Taconic Creek, and eventually it works its way into the Hudson River. But the sub-watershed that we're talking about here is the Taconic Creek watershed. There could be then sub-watersheds off of that with the various streams that dump into the Taconic watershed. But we're focused on that broader area of the entire Taconic watershed and where those raindrops fall.
Is it really important for this land to be protected too, or is it more about monitoring it?
It's an area where people live. There are farms, there's development that's happening. It's about when that stuff happens. How do you ensure that the quality of the stream is maintained and that you still have free movement that wildlife can have through this area? We can have both development, people living there, farms, and a healthy watershed and a healthy forest and ecosystem in this area.
So as the water source for the city of Hudson, does this get processed through a reservoir at some point?
There is a reservoir. The Churchtown Reservoir okay. is the reservoir where the water flows through. The water is also treated before it ends up in people's taps. So there is a treatment facility on this. It's not like some of the other watersheds, like New York City watershed has a very low-level UV treatment only. There is a chlorine treatment that happens with the water for the Taconic Creek before it gets to Hudson.
And if I'm a landowner and I know that my land's within the watershed, is there anything I should be doing or thinking of or planting or not planting? Or, you know, I mean, if I'm listening, I'm saying, hey, my property's in the watershed. First of all, how would I know that? And then would there be anything I'd do differently with my land?
Well, all properties are in a watershed.
But this particular one.
Are there restrictions because it's designated?
There are no legal restrictions that are there.
Because I know up the mountain, there's all kinds of fun stuff going on.
On the New York City watershed, there are many restrictions. Here in Columbia County, there are no restrictions within the watershed, but there are things people can do. And it's everything we can do to sort of do our part with these watersheds. So if you do have a stream that runs through your property, looking at, is there some vegetation you could plant along the stream? Something we call a riparian buffer. And this is where vegetation is really good with the roots in capturing any sedimentation or any sort of runoff that could be happening on the nearby property, whether that runoff is from agricultural practices or road salt or other materials that we want to keep out of the water.
And I think I just saw really recently that if you have that kind of feature on your property, you can get free tree saplings and shrub saplings, trees for tribs, right?
I did that
yeah.
on my property.
Yeah. Very cool, right?
They came in the spring in a box. And
did they tell you how to plant them?
They did. They told me how to plant them. They said to take pictures and send
and
them.
And how they doing?
They're doing okay. It was about 3 years ago.
Uh-huh.
There was a natural fall off of some of them didn't make it.
Right.
But because it's pretty rough. And this is an area where water comes when there's high...
And deer pressure.
And deer, they ask you to please and close them in deer
I heard
protection.
That tone of voice when you said the word deer.
Well, we all have that tone of voice now, right?
Yeah.
But I know that the town of Taconic had a Trees for Tribs planting like 10 years ago, and the trees are really mature and beautiful. I mean, it's pretty amazing to see that, you know, you put this little sapling in, and it's not only protecting the water area, the riparian area, but it's also a beautiful tree, right?
They give you good guidance on what types of things. They're going to send you ones that they know will tend to work. So
they can take flooding and things like that.
Swamp maple and another. One of the roses is another one.
Is it winged elm? Is that one of them? I just saw winged elm the other day. See, I'm going to ask a botanist question of Troy. Does that make sense?
Winged elm is not very common in Columbia County, but it is a native of Columbia County and can certainly be planted, and we would encourage it to be planted, particularly in some of those wet areas.
There are beautiful, big, winged elms behind the town hall of Taconic, and they're very, very distinctive looking. We had to, look on our app to see what they were, even. So very cool. I didn't even know if it was, I didn't know the species at all. So how many acres are there total in Columbia County?
So there are about 415,000 acres in the county.
Okay, so a big percentage is protected by easements then.
We're getting close to 10% of the land is protected.
That's amazing.
That's pretty impressive. Okay. Now, if the other 61 counties in the state did the same thing, we'd be really cooking.
There is a program, or a goal at the federal level and the state level. It's called 30 by 30. And that goal is to protect 30% of the land by 2030, which is a very ambitious goal given is where we're at right now. And now that land, that 10% that CLC has protected, that does not include the state parks and the state forest areas. So Columbia County actually has much more of the land protected than 10%, but there is also more work to do. We're looking at actually evaluating where in the county we should be doing more protection work. There are some areas that have a lot of protected land, such as Stuyvesant and Ancrum, and other towns where there's very little lands that are protected, such as Chatham.
You know, a lot of times we'll ask this question, whoever's on the podcast, about climate change. And I know there's a lot being done in New York State and specifically in Columbia County in terms of climate resiliency, right? There's a big program going on, right? And the Land Conservancy is involved in that, correct?
We're the fiscal sponsor for the... So the Columbia Land Conservancy was the fiscal sponsor for the Climate Carnival that recently happened this past year and are looking to continue to provide support to the climate smart communities across the county. We do have one staff person who's working at the county level and a number of staff who then volunteer their own time at their local town-based climate smart community group. We're in a place in the country where climate issues are certainly going to be felt and impacted, but they're also, we're in a fairly climate resilient location relative to other places around the country. We should remain a water rich location, although when that water is coming is looking to, it may change over time. But in regards to our forest, we should continue to see our forest as long as they can regenerate, which is where high deer become a concern for us for those forests. Right now we have in our forest a lot of beech and hemlock and oaks and hickories. The oaks and hickories should continue. The white pine should also continue to do well. Beech may decline due to disease. And as well, sugar maple is one that's expected to decline due to increasing temperatures. But with the sugar maple declining, we should see more hickories actually appear. I planted on my own property pecan because I lived in the South for many years. I'm actually excited to see how pecan can grow and should grow here in the Hudson Valley with a warming climate. But globally, climate change is really a serious problem, and we do have a role here in Columbia County that we can play to minimize the global impacts of climate. And that includes looking at restoration on our forest lands, shifting our energy resources to renewable energy, getting off of oil and natural gas and propane, and shifting to geothermal and wind and solar.
And there's lots of ways to do that, right? I know my town has a community solar plan where you can sign up and you don't have to put solar panels on your roof. You actually just sign up and basically the power company is telling you that your electricity is coming from solar.
And the challenge then is, where does that solar go? Particularly with here in Columbia County, right, where we want to support agriculture and we want to support renewable energy. So how can that happen where right now we're seeing a number of farmlands that are being converted to solar projects? We would like to see those areas where you can do both, something that's called agrivoltaics, where you can do farming and produce solar energy on these properties. So I think there are some more opportunities that we can see that happen. It does require the developers to spend more money on those solar projects, but it allows us to have that benefit of maintaining an agricultural economy here in Columbia County and developing a new economy around solar energy.
I don't envy you. It's the more I hear, the more it sounds like you have a really challenging job, Troy, right?
It's challenging, and there's fun in that challenge.
So we talked a little bit, just to backtrack a little bit, we talked a little bit about what people can do on their own properties. And some people in Columbia County own a lot of land and some people own a little bit of land. Like what give us like your top 2, 3, 4, 5 things that you think people should be doing on their land to conserve it, to make sure that, you know, you're supporting wildlife, et cetera. What would you do if, you know, if I told you I have 13 acres, I know you wouldn't plant like a Japanese maple on your land. What would you do?
Well, I think the first thing is to get to know your land, and you can actually do that by asking somebody to come in and tell you about your land. That's the first place to start, is inventorying your land.
Yeah.
Just as it is, like you were saying, you didn't know that those elms were there.
Right.
Take account of what's there.
And see what insects are there, right? I mean, are there particular butterflies that you're seeing on your land or particular birds? And there's probably a reason for that if you are, or if you're not seeing them, right?
Right. Yeah. And then make a plan. I mean... Yeah. You probably might not be able to do it all at once, but prioritize. And for me, it's the creek corridor there. I know I need to do something there, the area right around the house.
You're making a meadow too, aren't you?
Yeah, we did the meadow.
Very exciting, and not easy to do, but very exciting.
So
what else? What else, Troy? What else would you do?
On my property, I have about 2 acres, and I've been ripping out all of the invasives that are there. I have a lot of buckthorn and honeysuckle, which are of value to a number of shrubland bird species, but I want to shift that over to a more native-dominated system that's going to support, I think, a greater number of insects on the property. And so I'm planting a number of native shrubs that you can get through Soil Water Conservation District or other sources around the county that have native shrubs or trees and planting of any size, whether they're seedlings, saplings, or even more mature trees, depending on what your budget will support. I'm also trying to plant in some native grasslands, converting my lawn to an area that does not need to be mowed, using little bluestem, big bluestem, some native prairie species, and allowing it to become a butterfly meadow.
Very cool. And we have a list of sources for purchasing native trees, shrubs, seeds, and things like that that we can include in the show notes. I'm sorry, Gene, I got to ask this question. I always do. We've talked about some pretty hopeful things here, but like we always ask our guests, especially when we talk to guests and they're telling us about horrible things like jumping worms and invasive plants and all the bad stuff out there. Tell us, both of you, tell us what makes you hopeful so that we can leave on a happy note.
Okay, I'll start. I just find great inspiration in nature. I think that there are so many examples of how ecosystems are adapting to change, and we as humans can learn a lot from what's going on in the natural world by studying what's going on in the natural world. Lately, there's been a lot of reporting about how trees communicate, for example, and, you know, how they can send distress signals about drought or about invasives, and then other trees receive those messages. It's just amazing how resilient, really, a lot of plants are. That makes me hopeful. And another example would be beavers. I go to a place at BB Hill State Forest where beavers have come in and changed the landscape, made a wetland, and that's just fantastic. It's a new habitat for a lot of species of plants and animals, and also provides space for water storage and filtering, because now we're getting these heavy storms and we need help dealing with those. I see those storms come through on the stream.
Beavers are the coolest, aren't they? And you know what? There's a lot of towns that are starting to be a little bit more aware about beavers. What's the thing called that CLC uses? The beaver retriever, the beaver deceiver?
Beaver deceiver,
yeah, right? So that we don't have to kill the beavers. We can just make sure that they're doing things that aren't destructive, right?
That allows the beavers to do their thing and to protect our roadways from flooding that could happen if you do not have a beaver deceiver.
So what makes you hopeful besides the beaver deceiver? And I'm going to say it like several times now, beaver deceiver.
What makes me hopeful is the people and how they're caring for the land and just seeing this land ethic that is emerging across the county. So many people are inspired. They care, they're helping in their communities, they're supporting organizations like the Columbia Land Conservancy, they're asking questions about what can they do. So it's the people that really I'm most hopeful about and how that changes over time. This morning I saw 2 bald eagles flying over my house, and it wasn't that long ago that there were no bald eagles in Columbia County or even in the lower 48. And to see how the bald eagles returned is inspiring. To see that moose are coming back through Columbia County and bobcats and some of the bird species that are increasing across the county. There's a lot to be hopeful for. Some species are in decline, but I focus on the positive side, those that we see growing that were not here before. It gives me hope that we can turn around some of those that are under decline at this point in time.
Yeah, that sounds pretty optimistic. I think we should close on that note. Thank you both for coming. I've learned more than my tiny little mind can absorb, so I'm going to have to be listening to the podcast to regain some of it.
Well, thank you for giving CLC this opportunity to talk with you.
It's great talking to you. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Tim. Thanks, Gene.
That concludes another episode of Nature Calls, Conversations from the Hudson Valley. We would like to thank Sandra Linnell and Devin Connolly from Cornell Cooperative Extension of Columbia and Green Counties for production support, And a special thank you to our listeners for joining us on this episode of Nature Calls, Conversations from the Hudson Valley. You can find links to any of the topics mentioned in this episode at our website at ccecolumbiagreen.org. Comments and suggestions for future topics may be directed to us at columbiagreenmgb@cornell.edu or on the CCE Master Gardener Volunteers of Columbia and Greene County's Facebook page. For more information about Cornell Cooperative Extension of Columbia and Greene Counties, visit our website at ccecolumbiagreen.org or visit us in Hudson or in Acre. Cornell Cooperative Extension provides equal programming and employment opportunities.